Page 46 in the Pew Bible, Exodus chapter 2, verse 23 through 25. It's Exodus 2, 23 through 25. During those many days, the king of Egypt died, and the people of Israel groaned because of the slavery and cried out for help. Their cry for rescue from slavery came to God, and God heard their groaning, and God remembered his covenant with Abraham, with Isaac, and with Jacob. God saw the people of Israel, and God knew.
Good morning. You can keep your Bibles open to where Jeff just read on page 46 if you're using the Pew Bible. We're going to pick up a couple paragraphs later in Exodus chapter 3. So if you'd like to turn to Exodus chapter 3, we will be there in just a moment. It is good, again, to see each one of you. As I mentioned earlier, we are in week 4 of the story. And the story is more than just about us gaining information about how the story of the Bible unfolds. That is certainly one of our goals in going through this journey together, is helping us have a greater understanding and appreciation for what the Bible says and how it fits together. But the other part of this is that we want to see how God's story is our story, and how we can look at things that took place in ages past, real life events, but sometimes it took place so long ago that sometimes we have a hard time really believing these things are true. They are true, but they're also true in the sense that they reflect things that we go through in our life, and that God is still working and active today, and God is still accomplishing His story through us. So far, as we've gone through the story chronologically, week one, we talked about Adam and Eve, and looked a little bit at Cain and Abel and got all the way to Noah. That was a whole lot of time in just a few chapters of Genesis. But that's what we accomplished in week one. In week two, we talked really about the life of Abraham, the father of faith. We also looked at God building a nation through his descendants, especially in Isaac and in Jacob. And then last week, we talked especially about Joseph, also about his brothers, those who will be known as the 12 tribes of Israel. And we left off by finishing Genesis last week. It's chapter 3 in a companion book that we're using, but we finished off Genesis last week, and now we're in Exodus. I've got a timeline up here just to help us appreciate where we are and what is taking place. I mentioned a couple of weeks ago, from time to time I will do this to give us an idea of where we are. But to just give you an idea, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and Joseph, those four generations, those are the generations especially recorded from Genesis chapter 12 through chapter 50. This is how God is going to build his nation that we know as Israel. Joseph dies at the end of Genesis in approximately 1805 BC, 1800 years before the birth of Christ. Today we pick up in Exodus, and the first event, which hopefully you've read about it this past week. Well, I'm not really going to look at it in our sermon, but the first event really of Exodus is the birth of Moses, and that is approximately 1526 BC. Now, I put these dates up here to just give us an appreciation for some things. You know, we learned Bible stories growing up, having gone to Bible school and maybe being told stories in our families. And as the Bible goes, the stories go from Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, to Joseph and his brothers. And then the next person you come across is Moses. But it doesn't just happen that way chronologically, because there is a gap here of nearly 300 years. I haven't drawn this timeline to scale, because if you were to put a 300-year gap right here, well, that's the same distance as from Joseph dying to the time of Abraham. Just to give you an idea of when you get to Exodus, and the children of Israel are now living in a part of Egypt known as Goshen, the land that they were given, because Joseph was the most powerful person. He wasn't Pharaoh, but he was really the person in charge of what was taking place in Pharaoh's kingdom. And because of Joseph's steadfast loyalty to Pharaoh, because of his willingness to love and forgive his brothers, the children of Israel dwell in Egypt for centuries. A long time passes between the end of Genesis and the beginning of Exodus. To put it in perspective for us, this is more time than from today going back to the Declaration of Independence. You know, sometimes we hear stories about George Washington and you think, well, yeah, I know he really lived, but are some of those things really true? They sound more like fables and fairy tales, and maybe sometimes they actually are. But George Washington was a real person who did real things, and his generation was a generation we still remember today, but it seems so distant to us. Well, if you were in Moses' generation, that's what it would have been like to hear about Joseph and his brothers and Jacob and Isaac and Abraham. Yeah, they're our forefathers. They did a lot of great things, but things have changed. And we live in different times. And by the time of Moses, guess what? The Israelites are living in different times. Pharaoh, in Joseph's day, looked upon the Israelites with favor because of Joseph, because of his service to that kingdom, and really his service, as we talked about last week, to that part of the world, seeing them through a terrible famine. And for a time, the children of Israel and their descendants were looked upon with favor. But these hundreds of years pass, and what happens over hundreds of years? A family of 12, well, really it was 70 by the time they got to Egypt, a family of 70, well, they do what families do. They have children. They have grandchildren. They have great-grandchildren. And before you know it, this one family becomes so big that the Pharaoh now reigning over Egypt, he feels threatened by their presence. No longer does he look upon them with favor, he looks at them in fear. He sees the potential of this nation maybe becoming an ally of one of Egypt's enemies and being able to topple his kingdom. And so what does he do? He enslaves them. And that's largely what we're going to focus on this morning. And where we pick up in Exodus chapter 3, Moses isn't a baby anymore, and he's not a young man. We're right here around 1446 B.C., an 80-year-old man. By the way, I was thinking about this as I was looking over my notes. As you go through the story, those of you who are senior citizens, you should have a great appreciation for some of these stories. We don't know anything about Abraham until he's 75. We don't know really much about Moses until he's 80. And so if you ever tell yourself, well, I can't do a whole lot in God's story because of my age, well, 75 and 80, they're in the latter third of their life, even in Old Testament times. God can do great things through you right now as well. Now, yeah, last week Joseph was 30 when God really put him in charge of Egypt. But there are some not so young folks who are part of this story as well. And we need to appreciate that fact also. But 80 years has passed. That means 80 years from the time Moses was born to the time that he returns. 80 years has passed. That means Israel, as a family, not really a nation, so to speak, yet, but the Israelites have been enslaved for at least 80 years. A lot of things have changed. People are beginning to wonder, is God paying attention to us? Yeah, we've heard those stories about God paying attention to Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and Joseph. Is God paying attention to me? Is he ever going to save me? Is he going to save us from this mess that we now have been born into? We had no choice in this. This is where we are. This is where we're at. We're not really sure if we're going anywhere. And they cry out to God for deliverance, for rescue. This morning we're going to talk about God being a God of deliverance. God delivers us. God, the one thing hopefully that you have gained so far in the story is that we have a good God. People in times way past sometimes wonder, do we have a good God? Is he paying attention? Is he going to rescue? And is he going to deliver us? The passage that Jeff read for us in Exodus chapter 2 ends in verse 25 with saying, God saw the people of Israel and God knew. And with that little phrase, we find that God is going to deliver the children of Israel from their fear and from slavery and from death. Point number one. As a God of deliverance, God is going to deliver them from fear and from slavery and from death. And that is the prayer that they are groaning out to God, so to speak, in verses 23 through 25. They're looking to God, saying, are you going to rescue? Are you going to deliver? Maybe they're just asking, do you even see? And here in Exodus 2, we're told, yeah, God sees, God hears, and God knows. And God is going to deliver them from these three things. Obviously, the people lived in fear. Living in fear is, regardless of where you are and what you are experiencing, living in fear is really just one of the worst things you can suffer from. You can be a slave in Egypt, but you don't have to be a slave in Egypt to live in fear, do you? As you get into chapter 3, and we'll read more in just a moment, you get to chapter 3, there's somebody else who seems to be living in fear. And he's not a slave in Egypt. It's Moses. Moses, in a sense, is a free man. Now, he's free because he ran away. He ran away because he murdered an Egyptian. And he knows that the future, when that happens at the age of 40, is not going to go well with him. We're told that Pharaoh now seeks to kill him. And by the way, that Pharaoh would have been somehow related to Moses by adoption because he was raised by Pharaoh's daughter. But that Pharaoh wants to kill Moses, and what does Moses do? Well, he runs away. I probably would too. And for 80 years, now at the age of 80, God, when you get to chapter 3, is going to tell Moses, I want you to face your fears. And we'll look more at that in a moment as well. But you see, in a sense, the one thing Moses never wanted to do was to deal with the fear of ever having to return to Egypt and even maybe returning to see the Israelites again as well. What fear does more than anything else is that it enslaves us. It makes us slave of the thing that we fear. And for each one of us, what we fear probably differs from person to person. But if you allow it, whatever it is that you fear, it will make you its slave. It will have dominion, power, mastery over you and over me. And as you think about the children of Israel as they're in Egypt, what do they fear more than anything else? Yeah, obviously they fear the Egyptians. But it seems to me what they also might fear is probably something we all fear to some degree. And that's the future. What will the future hold for each one of us? We've been here for at least 80 years, and things have progressively worsened during that time. How much worse are they going to get? How much worse is the treatment from Pharaoh going to be? Imagine living day after day, year after year, now decade after decade, wondering, is there ever going to be much hope for us? And as you live enslaved to your fears, the greatest fear of all hangs over you, and that is death. For the Israelites, we don't really know to what degree the severity of their slavery ended in death for some slaves. But you have to imagine that there are now generations of Israelites who are being born into slavery, live their entire lives as slaves, and then what do they die as? As slaves. Your entire life. You've never been free. You've never had opportunity. You've never really looked at life with a sense, physically speaking, with any sense of hope. All you know is that you've been born a slave, you're going to live a slave, and you're going to die a slave. And that fear and that slavery and that sense of pending death just, it hangs over you. You go through that long enough, you groan out to God, you cry, you plead, you beg. You say, deliver us. And so we get to chapter 3. God appears to Moses in a burning bush. A bush that's on fire but not consumed. Obviously a sight that when Moses sees it, he says, never seen anything like this before. And he especially has never seen a burning bush that talks to him. And that's what this burning bush is doing. And God, in that bush, says, Moses, I have a task for you. But first, let me tell you what I'm going to do. Exodus chapter 3, verse 7. Then the Lord said, I have surely seen the affliction of my people who are in Egypt and have heard their cry because of their taskmasters. I know their sufferings, and I have come down to deliver them out of the hand of the Egyptians and to bring them up out of that land to a good and broad land, a land flowing with milk and honey, to the place of the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites. And now behold, the cry of the people of Israel has come to me, and I have also seen the oppression with which the Egyptians oppress them. The next thing that we see is that God delivers us from these things, but then he delivers us to something, doesn't he? If he delivers us from fear and slavery and death, he delivers us to hope, to freedom, and to life. He delivers us because he knows fear and slavery and death is not what he has made us for. One of the things that we have looked at so far in the story is why has God made us? What kind of God makes anything like us and continues to put up with us? Well, we've looked and we said, it's just who he is. It's his character. It's his nature. Defined by love. And here in his love, he says, speaking to Moses, I am going to deliver you. The fear that you have lived with, there is now going to be hope for the descendants of Jacob. You have been oppressed. You have been enslaved. I am going to deliver you. By the way, as you read the story this past week, and if you want to read it again this week, look at how many times throughout the account of the Exodus where God says, I am doing this, or I am going to do this. Yes, he's calling upon Moses to lead. He's sending Moses back to Egypt. But what does God say? I'm doing this. And I'm going to give my people freedom once again. Not just for the sake of freedom, although that's certainly a big part of it, but also that they can live, truly live again. What does he tell Moses? I have come down to deliver them and to bring them up out of that land to a good and broad land, a land flowing with milk and honey. God says, beyond what I am about to do is a new life for my people. There's going to be a good place, and there's going to be a good life. And I am going to come down to do it. To me, that's one of the most encouraging phrases in all of Exodus, but certainly in this conversation between him and Moses. I am going to come down. God doesn't say, I'm just going to sit back here at a great distance, and Moses, I'm going to call you to do this, and I hope you can get the job done. Good luck. This runaway murderer that Moses was. Now God says, I'm going to come down. I am going to be actively engaged in this process. I am going to lead you along the way. But yeah, there are some things I need you to do as well. That brings us to point number 3 about this deliverance. It begins with verse 10, the very next thing that God is going to say to Moses. He says there, come, I will send you to Pharaoh that you may bring my people, the children of Israel, out of Egypt. Come on, Moses. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to go back to Egypt. I'm going to send you to Pharaoh. Now let's just step back for a moment and consider something. If this is the God of all creation who spoke things into existence, who made man and woman out of the dust of the ground, if this is the God who handled the situation in the days of Noah by bringing a flood and starting all over with that family, surely couldn't have God brought the children of Israel out of Egypt without Moses? Could have, couldn't he? He tells Moses, Moses, here's step number one. It's time to face those things that we fear. And as you probably know and have read this past week, as you read Exodus 3, what does Moses just do over and over and over again? Just stumbles all over himself, making up excuses, right? This coming Wednesday night, that's what we're going to talk about. God is a God of deliverance, and one of the things He delivers us from is our excuses. And we're going to look specifically at Moses' excuses and God's answers to those excuses, because they're really not that much different from the excuses we give God today, are they? But God says, Moses, you got to go home. 40 years running away has been long enough. You have lived as a slave because of your fears. And Moses is a man afraid. But God says, we're delivered when we face those things that we fear, when we confront them and not run away from them. And so God tells Moses, I am going to be with you all throughout this process. He makes that abundantly clear with the 10 plagues, doesn't he? God doing things over and over again. Yes, there are times when Moses is a participant in God's activity, but it's God who does those things. And then the 10th plague, the worst of all, the Passover. The night when God initially gave that deliverance to His children of promise, so they escape. There's a sense of freedom that they taste for the first time that night. But God says, I need you to do something now. I need you to follow me. Skip to chapter 13 of Exodus. Exodus 13, it's page 56 if you have a pew Bible. Verse 21, Exodus 13, says, and the Lord went before them by day in a pillar of cloud to lead them along the way, and by night in a pillar of fire to give them light, that they might travel by day and by night. The pillar of cloud by day and the pillar of fire by night did not depart from before the people. What's God doing? He's saying, I'm here with you. Not just I'm here with you, I am leading you. I'm not waiting for you to direct me. I am going to guide you. I'm going to give you a cloud by day and a fire by night, but here's what I need you to do. I need you to follow me at all times. No matter where I go, no matter what time of day I say it's time for us to travel, I need you behind me. And so the children of Israel, as they leave Egypt, they follow this cloud and this fire. And then it brings them to a crossroads. Well, actually, it's not a crossroads, is it? It's how are we going to move from here? It's the Red Sea. We're actually told that God intentionally leads them to the edge of the Red Sea. And here's where their following gets tested. Do we keep following God up to this point? Or do we go back? Exodus chapter 14, starting with verse 10. When Pharaoh drew near, the people of Israel lifted up their eyes, and behold, the Egyptians were marching after them, and they feared greatly. And the people of Israel cried out to the Lord. They said to Moses, is it because there are no graves in Egypt that you have taken us away to die in the wilderness? What have you done to us in bringing us out of Egypt? Is not this what we said to you in Egypt? Leave us alone that we may serve the Egyptians, for it would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die in the wilderness. Imagine that conversation. Did we not say that something like this was going to happen? By the way, as you read Exodus, try to find where that conversation took place. Now, maybe it did take place, but it certainly is not recorded in Scripture. And you tell me the place where the people said that going back to Egypt is better than dying in the wilderness. The people were crying out to God because of fear, because of slavery, and because of death. And now what are they doing? They are complaining when God says, I am going to deliver you. I am here to rescue you. You know what we find out about the people right here? They still live in slavery. They are not enslaved in Egypt anymore, but they are still living under the bondage of Egypt, of the mindset that they lived with for generation after generation, the fear and the dread that they lived with for decades. That fear reappears right here. You see, for some of us, the idea of an uncertain future is worse than going back to the fear and the slavery that we have always known. They look at this Red Sea and they don't see any options possible. But all they have to do is turn around, and what do they see coming from behind them? That's death. And they've got a choice. Here's what Moses says to them. Verse 13. Fear not, stand firm, and see the salvation of the Lord, which He will work for you today. For the Egyptians whom you see today, you shall never see again. Now listen to verse 14. The Lord will fight for you. You've only got to do one thing. Be quiet. The word in the ESV is be silent. What's Moses telling the children of Israel? God is still going to rescue you. God is going to deliver you. Is God going to deliver these people because of their faith? What kind of faith do you see right here? I don't see much of any. I see people living with fear, living enslaved. People who would say, let's go back to the horrible ways that we know instead of the future led by God that we don't quite see yet. And we know what takes place next. God does what God said He would do. And He delivers His people through the Red Sea, not because of who they are, but because of who He is. The story continues, and we will continue with it next week. But the story remains the same for us today, doesn't it? This happened over 3,000 years ago. It happens in a part of the world that probably none of us know very well. We've never lived as slaves in Egypt, and we aren't crossing any Red Sea. But we have the same choice before us every day that those Israelites had before them. Do I want to live enslaved to my fears, knowing that that just leads to death? Or am I willing to follow the Lord, even if I don't know where it leads, because I trust that He has promised me life, that He has promised me deliverance, that He has promised to rescue me from everything that has ever given me fear, anything that has ever enslaved me, and everything that leads to death? What am I going to do? As I thought about especially the crossing of the Red Sea, I couldn't help but think about Romans chapter 5. We will end there this morning. I'll confess to you, as I was preparing this sermon, you know, I sometimes like alliteration and things in threes. I thought, you know, God delivered Israel through facing their fears, through following Him, and having faith in Him. But you know what? I read it again and again. I said, these people didn't have faith. There was not faith in the people up to this point. Frankly, the only reason why they crossed the Red Sea is because imminent death was right behind them. You had no choice. Let's either go through the Red Sea or let's die right now. They're like, well, we'll take the Red Sea. But they didn't do that in faith. And as I thought about it, I said, well, what's the parallel to that for us today? Romans 5 came to mind. Here's what it says in verse 6. For while we were still weak, at the right time, Christ died for the ungodly. For one will scarcely die for a righteous person, though perhaps for a good person one would dare even to die. But God shows His love for us in that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. What's that say? Just as the Israelites were given an opportunity of life, even though they didn't have faith at that point, God still did what He did. What about when Jesus died on that cross for us? We were still sinners. We were ungodly. We were enemies of God. And what did God still do? He still saved us. He still went through with His plan of rescue. And it's also interesting as you read the New Testament, sometimes the story of the Israelites going through the Red Sea is given as a picture of baptism. Of saying, you cross through, you go through this, and on the other side, what do you find there? Life. But God, He's already done His part. Now He asks us to follow Him. And yes, upon following Him, to see that He is good. He is a God in whom we can place our faith and trust. And He is a God who keeps His promises. That was the story for the Israelites, and it is still the story for us today. A God of deliverance. This morning, if you need to be delivered from your fears, from your slavery, and especially the slavery to sin and the death that comes with it, give your life to the Lord. He has already done His part. He has already rescued us. We just have to see it and take hold of the life that He has promised. If you need to come to Him this morning, please come forward while we stand and sing.